Hi, this is Rowan. In my new podcast, I argue that every song ever written qualifies as a love song. In each episode, guests bring along a tune of their choice to try and prove me wrong.
She's been cheated on. She's been lied to.
The Oxford Dictionary.
Court is in session.
Ultimately, it's Judge Erica who decides whether all songs are love songs.
All songs, all songs, all songs, the love songs.
This is Unfortunate History.
Hey everybody, this is Cody Pennington.
And this is Greg Skinner.
And welcome to Unfortunate History, the podcast that covers interesting, unfortunate, and downright wacky moments from history. And today, in today's episode, we are hitching up our wagons and heading out west because we're discussing Liver Eating Johnson.
Liver Eating Johnson. Oh, I have no idea who that is, Cody. Of course I don't.
None of our listeners know who this guy
is. No, this is polar opposite to last week's Julius Caesar one where he was quite a big name. We're going more obscure now.
Yes, we are going very, very obscure. He is not a household name, but he does have a pretty interesting book written about him. He led quite an interesting life, actually, and I would suggest you looking into him outside of this podcast episode. You, the listener, Greg, you can if you want. I don't really care if you do or not.
I'm not going to do it.
But he did live a crazy, awesome life, so definitely check it out if you feel the need. Now, Liver Eating Johnson was the epitome of a mountain man. He was a giant of a man, but as we'll see, he also had a pretty big heart. He was a man of many moods, but the most famous of which was when he was in the mood for a good old bite of human liver.
I was about to ask, did he eat liver? Was name's a bit of a giveaway?
No, he didn't. He actually went straight for the kidneys.
Oh.
No, he ate the liver.
Fox! God damn it, it's been a while since you've... Oh, no, forget it. Carry on.
Now, let me please preface this episode with something I've said many times. This story may not be historically accurate. As with all stories from history, embellishments are made, details may have been changed throughout the years. We could very well tell the story of a regular dude who lived in the mountains in the 1800s, but that's not what you listeners came here for. Now, that's not to say what we'll discuss today is false. We just don't know if some of the details have been lost to history or not. We can't be 100% sure. So, this is just a disclaimer to kind of save our own backs. With that said, our main source for today's episode is Crow Killer, The Saga of Liver-Eating Johnson by Raymond W. Thorpe, as well as an article from allthat'sinteresting.com.
So that's a lot of nicknames to have. So he's a crow killer and a liver eater. Most people just get one.
Yeah, and actually, that wasn't even his real name, Johnson. And we'll get into that in a second. The guy was just, I guess that was quite normal in the 1800s. You just decided you weren't who you were, and that was it.
What do I like doing? Killing crows and eating liver. That will both be my nicknames. Just couldn't decide on one.
To make it a bit more interesting, it wasn't crows the animal.
Okay, I think I know where we're going with this.
Okay, there you go. Now, Liver Eating Johnson was supposedly born in Little York, New Jersey in 1824. He was not born with the first name Liver Eating, just so we're clear.
His dad was called fucking Lung Eating. And his granddad, Brain Eating.
Thigh Nibbler.
Toe Chomper.
That's old Toe Chomper Johnson. No, that was not a family trope. Now, his birth name was actually John Jeremiah Garrison Johnston, not Johnson.
Arguably more of a mouthful than his nicknames.
Yeah, absolutely. You can see why they kind of narrowed it down a bit. There is a film about this guy called, I think it's John Jeremiah or Jeremiah Johnston. One of those. It takes a more... I don't know. I suppose it takes a bit of a easier stance on his eating of livers. It doesn't really good dive into it that much. And I guess if you're going into the film hoping to see that, you're going to be very disappointed.
But surely that's not the main bit of his life. What else are you going to talk about? If you got a guy named Liver Eating Johnson, That's what you make the film about. We're not interested in his personal life, really, are we?
Well, no, his personal life was very interesting. That's what I was saying at the beginning of the episode. He's an incredibly interesting guy. So he did have a lot of stuff to him. He's just not the he's not just the liver eater, you know? He's a three-dimensional person, Greg.
This is a human being we're talking about. People just think I'm just no food-eating livers, man. I'm sure there's so much more to me.
I'll tell you at the end. Remind me to tell you at the end about an interview that I read with liver-eating Johnson. I'll tell you about it towards the end of the episode. Just remind me. Now, we won't discuss liver-eating Johnson's childhood because we know fuck all about it. As always.
As always, yeah. Normal. Standard practice.
Yeah, but I'm relatively certain he just came out of the womb with a full beard anyways, like most mountain men do. He just kind of popped out with a pickaxe and was like, there's gold in them hills. Let's go.
Strolled out of his mom with a cigar and a
glass of brandy.
And his pet dog.
Well, when liver-eating Johnson grew older, I assume when he was around 5, he enlisted in the Navy. Now, this is where Johnson's name is altered, from Johnston to Johnson. Now, there are two main conflicting accounts as to why Johnson's name went from Johnston to Johnson. One account names that it's just a clerical error, but that seems really odd that someone would just allow their name to change due to a typo.
To be fair, you say that, but I am that kind of lazy where if it happened, I'd be like, nah.
Oh, to this point, my old driver's license in America literally misspelled my first name, William, to Willie Lamb.
Listen, I had an auntie who every year on my birthday card would put Dear Gerg without fail, and she didn't do it on purpose. She wasn't winding me up. It would be Dear Gerg, happy birthday. I'm like, it's not a fucking good birthday now, is it? You don't know my own name.
Gerg. That's hilarious. That should be your Instagram handle.
Fuck, it's got to be at the end of this one.
Yeah, it's got to be Gerg Skinner or Gerg. What is it now?
I don't know, mate. It's G Skin again.
Gerg Skin.
Gerg Skin.
Now, anyways, yes, the one account was that it was a typo of his name, but I don't actually believe that. Now, the other claim is that Johnson struck a naval officer during his enlistment, and he then went on the run from the military, and in hopes of throwing the authorities off his trail, he changed his name to the very original John Johnson. Now, the second of those stories is a bit more believable to me, honestly. Because, I mean, I just don't feel like you would change your life just because the secretary wrote your name down wrong. You know what I mean? If that were the case, my name would be something along the lines of Curdy, because Starbucks just keeps messing up my name constantly.
I'd have Greg and Gerg.
Greg and Gerg.
Greg. If you put any other, what's the word now, vowel in my name, it's just way funnier.
Yeah.
Greg, Gerg, Gage. Grog. Grug, good.
it's like the caveman names.
literally. Again, my dad's name's Doug and Greg. Doug, Greg. Literally, he's literally like, they're just sounds. They aren't words. They're sounds.
Or it sounds like mountain men. Back to the episode.
Oh, segue.
Now, since his time in the military didn't really work out, Johnson decided to go into the awesome fur trapping trade, which was likely a pretty good choice for him, because at this time in his life, in his early 20s, I think actually maybe 20 years old, he was already a pretty large man of 6 feet and 190 pounds, and he was said to have zero body fat on him pretty much his whole life.
I'm pretty sure in those days that was that was like a very tall man, wasn't it?
That was a huge guy. That was a huge dude. 6 foot and 190 pounds. If you were a normal person struck by debilitating diarrhea, losing all of your body fat, this guy's going to look like a giant.
Yeah, everyone like died of diarrhea back then, didn't they?
They did,
that was
That was the diagnosis. Just shit themselves to death.
These days, you just take a fucking soluble tablet and you're good to go. How times change.
Yeah, medical marvels. Now, after his time in the military while he was on the run, he decided to travel to St. Joseph, Missouri. And it's here that he meets an influential person in his life, Mr. John Hatcher. Everybody was named John at this time.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Hatcher was an old trapper himself, and he takes Johnson on a bit of an takes him on as a bit of an apprentice of sorts, and he teaches him the trapper trade. Mm-hmm. However, he does give Johnson a warning pretty quickly upon meeting him that he should watch out for Native American attacks in the area. This was pretty much the first time they met. He just said, yeah, I'll teach you some trapping stuff and watch out, you might die from a Native American attack. That was just kind of part and parcel of being a trapper and living in this area of Missouri.
But you must remember your health and safety is all time. It's like literally like these days when it's like you need a health and safety briefing, but instead of like trips and falls, it's like you could get shot in the eye with an arrow.
Shot and scalped. Like,
yeah, literally like they will hack off your hair.
Watch your back, yes. Now, as a bit of background, at this point in American history, Native American tribes had already been pushed pretty far west, or they were at least being pushed pretty far. The Trail of Tears, which we'll cover in another episode, had already occurred. So a lot of tribes have been picked up and moved to different areas. However, many tribes were becoming hostile or had been hostile for a while against outsiders. Whoever remembers our Billy the Kid episodes will remember a bit of this, the feuding tribes and obviously the tribes attacking whites and that sort of thing. So obviously at this time period, you would likely expect that there would be many Native American attacks.
Yeah, pretty normal. I can understand why they'd be a little bit pissed off.
Yeah. Now, Hatcher's warning to Johnson was a bit of a premonition, because not long after that, the two were attacked by the Arapaho tribe during one of their expeditions. However, the two men, being quite large themselves, and I suppose you'd say mountainous, they were able to kill the Arapaho relatively easily. Now, this is a pretty formative moment in Johnson's life, as this is when he was introduced to scalping. Somewhat to Johnson's surprise, Hatcher takes the scalps of the dead Arapaho, and then he urges Johnson to try it himself. And Johnson finds out that he's pretty good at it, and this would be a skill that he would continue to hone pretty much his whole life.
Do you reckon there's any... how hard do you think it is to scalp someone, really?
I think if you want to have the... balls to do it, it's pretty difficult. I think the mental side of it's pretty terrible.
Got given the opportunity to scalp someone. Do you think it's that hard, or do you think there's like an art to it?
I think there is an art in some way. You don't want to rip this. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but you don't want to rip the whole thing off. You got to get a clean cut, I suppose. I'm not sure. Never done it.
Listeners, if you've ever scalped someone, email us.
Go to the hospital. go to a mental institution and tell them. Go to the police station and let them know. Show them the scalps.
But first tell us, just so we know.
You can email us on the way to the police station, but go there. Now, the two men continued trapping together for quite a while, and Johnson continued his transformation into a legitimate mountain man. Firstly, he grew to 6'2" and 240 pounds. Apparently, he had a mountain man growth spurt at the age of 20.
What the fuck? People don't grow past 20. So he's still going.
He's still going. I don't know if I believe it or not, but apparently he was a mountain of a man, and he's just, I guess, going out and killing a bunch of Native Americans and skinning furs and all that stuff just makes you grow another 2 inches.
Do people not consider that he just got a new pair of boots with a bit of a heel on them?
No, of course not. He might have done. I don't know. Now, also, apparently, he develops a very keen sense of smell. And this isn't understated. This is saying he did gain, throughout all this trapping, gained a very almost superhuman sense of smell.
I can't picture being that good of a thing back then, though, because I'm pretty sure everything stank of shit.
You'll be surprised. Now, actually, his strength becomes legendary throughout this time of his transformation. I say, quote-unquote transformation. Allegedly, he could kill a man just by slamming him to the ground.
Jesus Christ. It's the big show!
Native Americans were actually said to have feared his kick. I'm not sure why that's not singled out, but his kick is a big deal, apparently. One of his friends even claims that he killed 2 Native Americans with a single kick.
Fucking.
I don't know where
you know what,
from.
I'm going to call bullshit on that one.
I don't know, man.
I have no doubts that he has a big kick.
Yeah.
Even a mega kick. But is he going to kill 2 people with one kick?
I think they described his legs as being the same or triple the size of a Native American's like torso. I don't know. He was said to have been an overbearingly large man.
Like nowadays, like 6'2", it's tall, but it's not like inhumanly tall. Like how little must everyone have been?
6'2" is like the average or the lowest a woman will go on Tinder. That's what they put their filters to.
Yeah, that's why I lie on it.
Exactly. My personality is 6'2". Now, further shows of Johnson's strength come after he is appointed as a member of the camp police in a Native American camp. This is probably a camp where they rounded up multiple tribes to move them to different areas, or it might have just been an area where they came to trade. I'm not exactly sure. I couldn't find a lot of information on that. But during his time as a member of the camp police, he broke up a knife fight between a Blackfoot and a Shoshone, and he did so by busting their heads together and killing them both. Like,
that's what my... So, like, literally, if you'd let them carry on, there'd be, like, at least one of them would have lived. Like,
yeah.
Did he help?
I suppose it kept the peace, but...
Again, it's kind of like... American police is why they're looking at things. Let's just gun everyone down, and that'll solve the problem.
Yeah, if they're scared to commit crimes, if they're scared they'll die, then we'll keep them in line.
Is that a marijuana cigarette?
Blah 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 blah. Oh, I joke, but it's only because of devastating depression about it all.
I don't mean to laugh at that statement. Yeah.
It's just my coping mechanism for all of it.
Yeah.
Now, in addition to being a trapper, this next story is going to come into play a little bit later, but it's important to mention. Now, in addition to being a trapper, Johnson also operated a wood yard to supplement his income, and it sold wood up and down the Missouri River. Now, during one of his deliveries, he came across a family that had been slaughtered by the Blackfoot tribe. He found that two of the sons were killed and scalped, and their 18-year-old daughter had been tortured, raped, killed, and scalped. And the husband, who was found to be named Mr. Morgan, was scalped but still alive. Now, Mrs. Morgan was not at the scene initially, but she did come looking for her family later with a hatchet in her hand. And she found the Native Americans mutilating her family, and she was able to kill four of the warriors, and the rest left with the still barely alive Mr. Morgan, who was never seen again. Now, Johnson's part in this story, he arrived a little bit later, after everything kind of had come down, and he assisted the woman, later to become known as Crazy Woman Morgan, in burying her children and the scalp of her husband, because they had no body, so they just buried his scalp. And then he then built her a small shack to live in, and she stayed there safely, not disturbed by the Native Americans, who were terrified of her. And this woman will, like I said, have a part to play towards the end of our story.
See, like, I feel like if you have to literally bury your kids and the scalp of your, you know, your husband, I feel like you have the right to become a little bit of a mad woman.
Yeah. Crazy Woman Morgan. Definitely.
Crazy Woman Morgan. Yep. You've earned that right. You've earned that name.
Yeah. Well, now, at this point in the story, Johnson has made his full transformation into a mountain man. He is a proper trapper mountain man, looked up upon as incredibly strong, incredibly virulent. I don't even know if that's the right word. Anyways, he's made himself a name. Now, in the spring of 1847, Johnson felt that it was time for him to settle down and start a family. Now, as you can imagine, finding a wife as a mountain man is pretty difficult.
Mm-hmm. That's when you marry a tree, yeah, or a log.
With the right size hole. It's just hard to find the tree with the right size hole.
Why won't you conceive?
Give me my saplings.
He actually cries like a sapling man child. He's like, kill me.
Kill me.
Burn me. Chop me up. I'm an abomination.
That's going to be another shirt.
I'm an abomination.
A sapling man child saying, I'm an abomination. So, listeners, if we have any artists listening, please make that, and I will give you full props to put it on our shirt on our website.
Wouldn't it just be like Groot?
Yeah, Groot, or like one of those Pokemon. With like the face, just the big eyes.
Except it knows its existence is an abomination.
Yeah. Well, now that Johnson wanted to settle down, he decided to travel to the Flathead camp nearby and offered the sub-chief of the tribe gifts in exchange for his daughter. And this actually worked, and the sub-chief's daughter, the Swan, was married to Johnson. Yeah. I'll say this as a bit of information about the Flathead tribe. I've seen some conflicting accounts, but apparently the Flathead tribe was known for the intentional deformation, like cranial deformation. So whenever babies were born, babies' skulls can be somewhat malleable. You can mold them away in a certain way. So they would actually attach them to a board, and it would flatten their foreheads and elongate their skulls. Now, I've seen conflicting accounts on whether or not this was legitimate, but there's also photographs of it happening and pictures of it happening, so I'm not 100% sure, but we're probably going to go with that because the swan, the sub-chief's daughter, gets her name from the fact that she didn't have this done and she had a normal forehead.
Oh.
So her forehead was a bit curved, similar to a swan.
See, when you told me that like a baby's like head, you could like mold it, I just pictured, what's that film with like Patrick Swayze and the other woman and they're making clay pottery in a really romantic moment. But you said it's them like molding
it's
their children's head.
It's this baby's head spinning at an awful rate, just round, 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 round. Oh, God, don't do that to a baby.
You're hypersensitive to that thing, though.
Yeah, definitely.
3 months ago, you wouldn't have batted an eyelid at that comment.
Probably not. Now, the couple moved to Johnson's cabin, and they were actually relatively happy together. I couldn't find much information stating that they were unhappy, so we'll just assume that they were at least enjoying each other's company. So,
to an extent. Like she had a choice. She was traded. She was cattle.
She was literally in a cabin in the middle of the woods, far from civilization.
With this big dude who could kill her with his big
kick.
Toe. You know what I mean? Like, she's like, yeah, I'm happy. He just has to be happy all the time.
Well, apparently they were very happy together because the next bit of the story and the next bit of his life probably wouldn't have happened.
Hmm.
Now, after their honeymoon phase, Johnson had to get back to trapping. So he set out on an expedition, leaving the swan with a pony and a gun for protection. Now, these expeditions were no small thing. They normally lasted months. So he was gone for quite a few months to handle this trapping. Now, unfortunately, members of the Crow tribe found that the swan was living in this cabin, and they saw that she was alone. So they broke into the home, attacked her, killed her, and scalped her. And they also stole every possession from the cabin, including the swan's pony, as well as all the other horses.
Motherfuckers!
Yeah.
I assume Big Man Johnson was a bit annoyed about this, yeah?
He was not happy about this. Now, this next bit of information is a bit difficult to hear. It is pretty difficult to hear. We could have put a warning at the beginning of the episode, but we didn't because it's only a small bit. So just be forewarned. Johnson's expedition took months for him to complete, like I said earlier. All this time, his wife was dead and decaying at their home. When he returns home, he finds a vulture picking his wife's skull clean. He also sees the remnants of the child his wife was carrying.
Fuck, man.
Now, Johnson finds an eagle feather at the scene, which points him towards the attack being committed by the Crows. So he takes his wife's and child's remains and hides them in the forest where they won't be disturbed. And he vows to avenge their murders right then and there.
Reasonable response, you know what I mean? That's brutal, man. That's fucked up.
It's pretty brutal, yeah. The fact that he had no idea that she was pregnant, and it is quite brutal, yeah.
Even finding your dead decaying wife, that's enough. Even losing all your horses, enough to be a little bit annoyed.
Well, at this time, they'd kill you for that.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, that was a death penalty, wasn't it?
Horse hanging.
Avery.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, after this, stories begin to spread about Johnson's mutilation of the Crows. Bodies are found murdered and mutilated, with their bodies cut below the ribs and their livers removed. Now, Johnson's friends claimed they knew that he was behind the killings, and he was the one eating the livers raw. Supposedly, the Crow believed that the liver was a sacred part of the body, and it was necessary to pass into the afterlife, so Johnson wasn't going to let that happen.
That's pretty badass, actually.
Yeah.
It's not one of those revenge stories now. I'm like, yeah, go on, eat those fucking livers, man.
Well, his reputation started to turn to a legend, and the name Crow Killer and Liver Eating Johnson grew. White women would even threaten their disobedient children with a visit from Liver Eating Johnson unless the children behaved. Now, Johnson continued his quest for revenge, and he found a group of 50 Crow traveling towards the Bitterroot Mountains, which was Flathead territory and where Johnson had met his wife. Now, this whole time up to this point, he's been just killing Crows, just finding them and killing them. It's hard to go into detail on it because that's all he did. He found them, killed them, slit open their ribs and ate and just bit their livers.
This is like his only hobby. Like, what do you like to do? I like to kill crows.
Oh, cool. This has been the worst Tinder date ever.
You should have read my bio first.
I have a very large book written about me. Now, Johnson follows these 50 Crow and attacks and kills each of them one by one. He kills one and finds that he's actually carrying the scalp of a woman, but not a white woman. So he's then convinced he's killed his wife's murderer. murderer.
Hmm.
But he would make sure that all of the Crow involved would share in the vengeance. So, Johnson rides ahead of the Crow to the Flathead camp and found his father-in-law, Bear's Head. This was the Swan's father. Now, he warns Bear's Head of the approaching Crow. And he also shows Bear's Head the scalp of his daughter, the Swan. And Bear's Head, obviously infuriated, then tells Johnson that the Flathead warriors will be ready for the Crow to attack. And both men will finish the vengeance for the Swan's murder.
Oh, it's getting exciting.
Yeah. Now, the Crow do attack. And they showed that they were a terrible force. They were very much outnumbered, but the Flatheads were proved to be the stronger force. And the Crows were all eventually overpowered, and every single one of them was killed. And this actually did secure Johnson's revenge for his wife and child. And he felt pretty much like he had gotten the revenge he needed. And then he then travels the same road he traveled the first time he brought his wife home, back to his cabin, content that he had had his revenge.
Go on.
But that's not the end of the story.
Oh, there's more. I was looking at the timer and I thought, this isn't long enough. What happens now?
No. Now, Johnson returned home and he settled in for the winter. Now, he had never actually buried his wife's and child's bones. He had only hid them in the woods. Most of you listeners might have caught that.
I was just thinking, like, maybe you could, like, check the scalp on the skull, and if it, like, fits, he'd be like, what is it, Cinderella? Like, if the scalp fits, then...
That's tasteless, Greg.
It is pretty bad. I've been thinking of it for a while.
That's very tasteless.
I've been thinking about it for a while.
That's not the reason he did not bury their bones. He didn't bury their bones because he would frequently make trips out into the woods to hold the skulls, and he would kind of zone out while he was holding them.
Oh, that's not... It's morbidly nice, but...
That's pretty... It's pretty sad.
You know, it's really sad, but you know what I mean? But imagine, like, the love of your life has been murdered, and, like... That, how is that going to help the grieving process?
It doesn't. It definitely doesn't. And he continues his rampage in a moment. So, like I said, he would frequently visit the skulls and kind of zone out and just spend time with them. However, he was seen on one of these occasions. And actually, it's said in the book that he senses the person was watching him, likely due to his very fantastic sense of smell. Now, it was then known that he had actually committed his acts upon the Crow in revenge for his family's death. Nobody actually knew this at that point, until this point, obviously. They had just thought that this guy was going around and killing crows. But he was doing it for a reason. So when they found that out, the word began to spread. Now, as the word of this spread, rumors also spread that the Crow were just a laughingstock. They were beaten by a single man, and they were mocked for it. And the Crow were actually a very proud people, as well as incredibly skilled warriors. They were very skilled warriors.
Well, they can fuck off. We're not on their side. We don't like them.
Well, I mean, no. This attack was pretty heinous for them to do.
Yeah.
So when they heard that the reputation that they were gaining from liver-eating Johnson's actions was showing them in a pretty terrible light, they decided they needed to do something about it. So they held a spring council and decided to send 20 of their bravest warriors to find and kill the Crow killer. And these warriors were sent to different areas in hopes that at least one of them would be able to kill Johnson. Their mission lasted 14 years. And not a single one returned to the tribe.
What, did they die of old age? They've been out there that long.
We'll discuss a few of the interactions Johnson had with these warriors in a moment, but Johnson claims to have killed each one of them in hand-to-hand combat. One thing that he insisted on was that each one knew before they died that he was being killed by liver-eating Johnson.
Liver-eating Johnson.
Now, as the years went on, Johnson's formidable nature, especially in relation to revenge, became a pretty big talking point. In fact, many of Johnson's friends approached him for help with their own vengeance. Now, Johnson would almost always assist with these situations, but if he agreed to help anyone, he would always step back at the conclusion, allowing the person to take full credit for the act of vengeance. See, Johnson felt that revenge was a very personal thing that should not be shared.
So he's like a 90% assassin, but like saves the last bit for the person.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay him. I'd be like...
People weren't paying him. He was just doing it for the crack.
No, I'm sure he was... actually, I don't know, actually. He might not have been paid because he was
doing it. It seems like the kind of guy who would probably... probably kind of likes this kind of thing. He's probably really bored now.
Yeah. I mean, all this time, this whole story is going on, he's still killing Crow Native Americans. He's still killing Crow tribe, as well as many other Native Americans. He goes into a lot of different scenarios where he just kills a lot of, like Sioux, the Sioux tribe. I think, we talked about the Arapaho earlier. He's killed, but he brags about this, which shows him in a pretty terrible light. At some point in the story, he does brag that he's never killed a white man. So it's pretty intense. And that will actually be a pretty intense statistic in a moment.
See, it's quite funny when you think about it, because obviously he's the main character of our story today. So you're kind of automatically on our side and you're kind of against the Native Americans because we're talking about this guy. When you actually think about it, like outside, I'm like, hang on, like the Native Americans were the victims whole time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is obviously some blame on both sides. The Native Americans were very violent towards certain people. Certain tribes were very violent. And for not saying that's not for good reason. Obviously, their lands were being stolen and their lives were being completely uprooted. But they also found a cabin and murdered an innocent woman that was just a part of another tribe. So, you know, and liver-eating Johnson probably shouldn't have eaten so many livers. You know, it's blame on both sides.
Yeah, blame on both sides, you know.
We cannot romanticize liver-eating Johnson.
Yeah, well, yeah. We have.
Now, Johnson continued his trapping career, and on one occasion was with a friend named Goo. I think it's Goo, or it's either Goo or Go, but we're going to go with Goo.
It sounds like what someone, it sounds like what a Starbucks barista would misspell my name as.
It sounds like an imaginary friend. I don't think this is even real. Now, while they were on their expedition, Goo was nervous that their campfire was going to draw the attention of dangerous tribes in the area they were in. Now, Johnson had actually already sensed, with his amazing sense of smell, apparently, that they were being tracked. But he thought it was actually the Sioux tribe. This was the Blackfoot tribe. So they doused the campfire and ran into the woods. Now, while undercover in the darkness, Johnson found one of the Crow warriors, which had been sent to kill him. So he kicked him to the ground and stabbed him to death with his Bowie knife.
Why would he have to stab him to death if he's doing his mega kick?
He probably wanted to enjoy it.
I thought his mega kick was the most mega amazing powerful thing in the world. If he can kill two, he can kill one crow with one.
It could, but I don't know. Maybe you have to land it in the right way. You can't be perfect all the time, Craig. He is human, okay? Well, at this point, Goo takes the opportunity to ask Johnson why the crow were following him and why he had set out on this big thing. I mean, the people knew that that his family had been killed, but Goo wanted to ask about the more specific details. Well, Johnson explained some of the story to him, saying that this was the 18th of the 20 crow that had been sent after him. And up to this point, he had killed probably 400 to 500 crow warriors in total.
Gotta be a record. Also, I do think that Goo is a volleyball named Wilson.
he's the terrible tree offspring.
Yeah.
He's just got him strapped to his back. Why are you killing all the crows? Kill me.
Why won't you just kill me? I love you, Goo.
You killed 400 or 500 crow and you won't kill me. Jesus Christ. Well, this is also the point where Johnson brags about never killing a white man, although he killed 400 to 500 crow warriors. Now, as he explains this, Johnson is performing his signature move of slicing the crow's belly open, thrusting his hand inside, and removing the liver. And Goo begs Johnson not to eat it because it'll make him gag.
I can't take Goo seriously.
But Johnson gives a shrug and he eats it anyway. And that's even funnier when you think about the deformed offspring saying it strapped to his back. No, don't do it!
It'll make you gag! Eat me!
He starts throwing up like dirt and leaves.
That's all I'm picturing now.
We need Goo on a shirt now. Yesterday.
I want to know what Goo looks like. We need it yesterday, man.
Yesterday. Now, in another strange liver-eating Johnson episode, Johnson is actually captured by a young Blackfoot chief, the Wolf. Now, the wolf recognizes Johnson as liberating Johnson, and he decides that they'll keep him and trade him to the Crow tribe for goods and supplies. The Crow, at this point, had offered a chief, I don't know if you'd call it a chiefship, or they offered to make anybody who brought him the dead body a chief. But this guy was already a chief, so he's just going to get some goods and supplies. Now, the wolf and his tribe decided to have a celebration that evening for capturing the amazing Crow Killer. Now, while they are celebrating and getting drunk, Johnson is able to loosen his ties and ambush the warrior guarding him. They only had one guy guarding him, which was not smart.
Nah.
He kicks the guard broadside and knocks him out cold. Now, before escaping into the night, Johnson realizes that he needs food for his journey. Silly goose. It was winter at the time, so it would be difficult finding food at this point in the year. So, he takes the warrior's knife, cuts off his leg at the hip, and takes it with him. Just throws it over his shoulder, runs off into the snow.
He's like, which bit do I want? Yeah, that's why leg? Why didn't he just get the kidney like he always does? Like, that's his signature move. He's
he always goes for the liver. But
liver, that's the one. But, my bad.
Yeah, but there was a ton of meat on the leg. There's going to be a ton of meat on your leg. And he uses this leg, actually, as a source of food while he makes this terrible trek back home through the snow, half naked in the mountains. Now, on this journey, he fights a mountain lion over the leg. He has to, I can only imagine that he beat it to death with the ankle.
With the leg.
Yeah, he fights a mountain lion over the leg, and he wakes up a grizzly bear out of hibernation and has to escape.
What? This guy cannot catch a break.
Yeah.
He's like, I just want to eat some fucking crows, man.
Yeah. Well, he just wants those livers.
He wants those livers, man, and his leg. He's worked hard for that leg.
He did. He just literally just sliced it off like Robert Liston.
One swift bosh off.
Sink.
We have got a history of, so that's, this will be the second person we've covered that has
amputated a leg.
Has killed more than one person with what is essentially one move.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, with a kick instead of slicing.
It's not quite Liston numbers, but
no, Liston was much better. Go back and listen to our pilot episode, our number one episode, if you guys want to hear that. But Johnson finally does make it home. He makes it home back to the cabin, and he's gaunt and lost a ton of weight, but apparently he gains it back super quick, so it's not that big of a deal. Now, Johnson then, a little time later, again meets up with his friend Goo. I can't take him seriously either.
I was wondering what happened to Goo.
No, he just laid him down in the corner of the cabin.
Just buries him under some sort of like, shh, my son, shh. Just kill me!
Well, they set up camp in a area where they were performing an expedition. Now, apparently, in addition to being a giant of a man who could survive a winter with an amputated leg and kill you with a single kick, Johnson was also fantastic at baking biscuits.
What the fuck? How those don't go in the same person, you know?
Well, when you're talking about the Old West biscuits, not talking about English biscuits like cookies.
Oh, I remember
We're talking biscuits like Southern biscuits where you put gravy on top. Now, these were a huge food source in this time because they were easy to eat and they were filling. You can throw some beans on them and you'll be full for 14 days.
I think I've tried a biscuit.
I'm sure you have.
I've been to the American South. I'm sure I've tried a biscuit.
I'm sure you have. Well, he actually even had a reputation for baking these biscuits. He was very well known for them.
Well, so he could essentially be crow killing, liver eating, biscuit baking Johnson.
He could have been, but that's just a mouthful. Well, one day at his and Goo's camp, he spends all day baking a big load of biscuits. Just cooks them all day. Now, he goes to the river and to clean his pan. Now, while he's cleaning his pan in the river, he senses another Native American nearby. So he sneaks back up to the camp to see a large crow stuffing one biscuit after another into his mouth. So he sneaks up behind the crow, overpowers him, kills him, scalps him, and removes and eats his liver. And this was apparently the 20th crow that was sent to him, that was sent to hunt him down 14 years prior. And oddly enough, the amount of time he was pursued made Johnson actually admire the crow in a certain way. But in this instance, he does go on to tell Goo just how good a biscuit is with a warm liver. Blah.
Here, goo, have a biscuit. Just kill me!
Why have you not killed me yet? It's been 14 years.
I need goo illustrating that.
I know. Well, Johnson again sets out on another expedition with a fellow trapper. I don't remember this guy's name. Sorry. Now, it's a pretty successful expedition, but on their way back, they sense that they're being tracked. Or more accurately, Johnson smells that they're being tracked. So in the evening, they made a large campfire to mark their camp while they hid in the darkness. And this was a trick, obviously. While they're hiding, they notice that 20 young Blackfoot warriors approach the campsite. But they're ambushed by Johnson and his friend, and the two men are able to kill nearly all of the warriors, and the rest are wounded and escape. All in all, I suppose you can consider the whole expedition a huge rousing success.
Yeah.
Well, you'll remember from the beginning of the story, Crazy Woman Morgan.
Oh, I'd actually forgotten about Crazy Woman Morgan.
Yeah, that's why I reminded you. I'm a great storyteller.
You are a good storyteller, Cody. I'll give you that.
Well, Crazy Woman Morgan, I don't know why I'm laughing at this, but she unfortunately starved to death the same winter following her.
Is that her story? Is that all you had to have? What did you need to remind me?
That's her story, yeah. She unfortunately starved to death the same winter that Johnson helped her bury her family. But, however, on the way back from the expedition with his friend, Johnson actually passed by her cabin, and he noticed that there was a grave dug. It was built for her, and apparently the grave had been made by the Crow tribe out of respect for liver-eating Johnson himself.
What?
Yeah, they had respected him so much for being such a powerful warrior, because obviously they were warriors themselves, that they decided to bury this woman because they knew their history. They buried him for him. That's how it's described in the book, anyways. Well, this pushed Johnson to actually have a bit of a change of heart and pursue a peace with the Crow.
Are they going to be that forgiving?
Well, he found the Crow chief after a bit of searching. He knew that they were around the Missouri River. Well, he found the Crow chief, Chief Greybear, along with 26 Crow warriors near the Missouri River. While the chief was taking a drink from the river, Johnson approached him through the bushes. But when he approached and came out of the bushes, he had his hands up as a sign of, sign of peace. Now, Greybear was obviously pretty terrified of Johnson. But Johnson tells the chief that he's actually done with killing members of the Crow tribe.
After 600.
After about 600, yeah. And he attributed his change of heart to the grave he saw that was dug for his friend Crazy Woman Morgan. Now, Chief Greybear actually does accept his offer of peace, which ends a decades-long war between liver-eating Johnson and his liver-eating victims, the Crow. Now, liver-eating Johnson then went on to actually be a friend of the Crow, as well as many other tribes, assisting them with issues they may be facing while warring with other tribes. He literally went on to just help people. And I think it seems to me that he just got tired of killing this one tribe.
I suppose it must get boring after a bit.
I suppose so, yeah.
Imagine doing something like 600 times. Remember when we used to play weddings?
Yeah.
Remember when that got boring after 600?
Like, oh, God, this again. I can only imagine eating liver 600 times.
Just purely out of principle. Like, oh, I got to do it again. It must be like going to work. Like.
Every single time you got goo on your ass just saying, please don't, please.
Why did you create me?
Please stop it. Eating the liver is so gross.
My existence is painful as it is. Why are you making it worse?
Well, liver-eating Johnson's career as a trapper eventually pretty much came to an end because the trappers were pretty much not dying out, but the whole idea of a trapper was just becoming less and less appealing. And it got to the point where there was only a small few. Most people went off to different areas to perform different types of work. It's just a bit better for them, I suppose. In the long run, you get tired of it, man. You can only go out and trap and kill these beavers and rip off their skins and scalp a Native American. It just gets a bit. It's like a slog after a while. You know what?
If you love what you do, it's not work. It's not a job anymore.
You never work a day in your life.
You never work a day in your life.
And she sure loved killing those crows.
But it got too much. And
it got too much, yeah. Well, it eventually came to an end. And he actually found an on-off relationship with law enforcement.
I was expecting to say like a woman or something.
No. He I don't think he ever remarried. He was pretty intent on killing those Native Americans.
Just him and goo.
For like a decade or two. He actually became a sheriff of a town, I think, in Missouri. He was also a marshal in another town in Missouri. And he continued in law enforcement, and I think he's still trapped on and off, but it wasn't really like it was before. And he did this up until the point where his health began to fail him, and he was admitted into a veteran hospital in 1899, and he died a month later in January 1900.
Gee, not that long ago.
How relatively recent it was. Now, Although I can't say that this story has a terribly unfortunate ending, he did live on into his good years, and he had a crazy interesting life after his warring with the Crows. If you want to learn more about that, read his book. We could not go into more detail on his... It would be a 3-hour-long episode, and I'm happy to do that, but we don't get paid to do this, so...
Nope.
I think an hour or 45 minutes to an hour is enough. Now, I will say that Liberating Johnson, speaking of unfortunate, he did experience true tragedy in his life, and that tragedy lasted for decades due to his vengeance. It was near obsession. And just like the story of Moby Dick and other stories of obsession, the obsession consumed him, which I think was truly unfortunate. However, at least he pulled himself back at the end and kind of redeemed himself, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd say this is one of our less... it's unfortunate for the Crows.
Oh, 100%.
And also his wife. But
yes.
For our actual character, I suppose the most unfortunate part about his specific life was the death of his wife and unborn child.
Yeah, which is obviously terrible and unfortunate. And it obviously affected him his entire life. I can only imagine the depression that this guy had. As a mountain man, you're already pretty significantly depressed. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine you're going to be very happy just murdering and murdering.
You're going to be pretty much, you know, lonely anyway. And you actually find someone, you know, we're married, and then, you know, murdered.
Yeah.
Not good.
No, very not good. And you can only he had blood under his fingernails 24/7. Oh, and I'm sure he ate with his hands. It's very good.
Oh, big time. Big time. Went in on those livers. Proper.
Back when they didn't have HIV. I mean, back in a simpler time.
Back when you could just eat it. You know how many human livers I would eat if not for the HIV virus?
I would eat zero.
I would also eat zero, actually, now that I think about it.
That was a terrible, terrible thing to say. You know how many people I'd eat if I wouldn't get a disease? I would just chow down.
If it wasn't for COVID, I would have eaten so many people this year.
I almost came very close with the amount of money I lost. I came very close to having to eat pretty much everybody near me in the general vicinity. My neighborhood would have been gone, wiped out.
Well, you know what? You are married. You know, that counts as what, through sickness and health and what, till death do us part. So
Up the process.
Is that not a green light to eat your wife?
I suppose so, but she's just amazing, so I can't do that. Well, that's the story of Liver-Eating Johnson.
Liver-Eating Johnson, all right.
Yeah, Greg, I hope you really enjoyed that one. I mean, it was a pretty interesting guy.
That was a fun episode, man. I liked that one. It was a nice, like, because I feel like the Julius Caesar one was kind of like, it's a very detailed, slow burner of an episode.
Of course, yeah.
And I feel like this one was pretty much from the get-go, like...
Whoa!
Yeah.
The guy's just literally slathered in blood. Yeah, I you know, we try to switch up the episodes every now and then so that we give something different with each episode. I think that's more fun, I think, and it's better for us as well. I have more fun researching the topics and stuff. Next week, we have a pretty intensive one. I won't tell you what it is, but it's going to be pretty intensive, and it's going to be, I suppose it's going to relate to times now, so take with that what you will. But I'd like to shout out something. I know that everybody, especially small business owners, are really struggling right now in COVID. I know I am. As a small business owner, it's been very, very terrible. So especially in England, with all of the regulations the government has brought in, it's been very difficult for small businesses to make money. So what I'm thinking that we should do is offer to anybody in England, we can do it in America as well, but I think some of the businesses are able to work, but definitely English small businesses. If you own a small business, or if you know somebody that owns a small business, a friend or family member, whatever, email us and let us know, and we'd be happy to shout out the business on our show and for free, 100% for free, just to give a little bit of, we're not a huge podcast at all, but if we can do our little bit of helping somebody out, try to get a sale somewhere here and there, I feel like we should really help out, because I'm struggling. I know a lot of other people are as well.
Like I say, in this time, independent businesses are, it is the fucked at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be getting any better.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And there's a lot of small business owners that are excluded from all of the funding options. I know I am. So I know it's very difficult to even get help from the government, even though they're telling you not to work. You can't get any funding from them that they're offering, which is a very, very difficult position. So, small businesses are a backbone to England, and it's an incredible part of the economy. And I would hate to see everything go under. So if you know somebody, or if you are a small business owner, just let us know. Contact us at info@unfortunatehistory.com, and we'll be happy to just shout you out on one of the episodes. And we'll continue doing that for the indefinite future, I think, in the in our little last bit here, our housekeeping part of the episode. So please do that. I'm more than happy to do that.
This potentially the most unfortunate bit of the whole episode is the crisis we're in right now, you know, in 2020.
Yeah, but I hope that we can have these episodes out every week to help people kind of get through it. I want to help people get through lockdown. If you blare us and listen to us talk and curse and talk about, you know, people being covered in Native American blood, just dripping with liver juice.
Dripping with blood.
Yeah.
Well, like I say, the government are saying that all people who are working in the arts, and I count podcasting as an art form, they should retrain. Well, we think bollocks to that, and we're doing it for free. So enjoy, guys.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely think that they're misguided. Don't want to get too political, but I can see that their policies are definitely meant to help more of the corporations than to help the individuals. So
yep.
Is what it is at the end of the day. But yeah. Shout us out, or give us an email, and we'll shout you out. Also, don't forget to message your questions for the Q&A, info@unfortunatehistory.com. Info@unfortunatehistory.com.
Yep. Don't forget the shop.
Check out our merch, please. If somebody wants to draw goo, for the love of God, do it. We'll throw them on a shirt. That would be amazing.
Oh,
and we still
I'd
have to
it.
Do the JFK slap Jesus shirt. So we'll do all of this. And then also, I had another idea for a shirt that would be, it's like a phone, and it has Julius Caesar and Pompey having a text message back and forth with Julius Caesar saying, come home, man. No, you're going to kill me.
one last one. We got the cries going, you slag.
You slag.
You slag.
Oh, you slags. Well, yeah. I suppose that's it, man.
I've got to give one more shout out to Anita. I've shouted her out before, but literally the day the Caesar episode come out, after like however long we've not been doing it, straight up got a picture saying finally. So yeah, appreciating the consistent love.
Who was that from?
Anita.
Oh, Anita, always holding strong. Yeah, definitely. Thank you guys so much for supporting. We already had a ton of downloads on that, on the Julius Caesar episode. It's good to be back, and we've got some sick episodes lined up. I'm really excited for some of these episodes. It's going to be really, really fun. So please, guys, I haven't said this in a while, actually, but tell your families, or show your family and tell a friend about the episode. It'd be great if you could spread the word about us. It's really nice to see it continue to grow, but we'd love to have a whole listener base. I mean, when things clear over, God, we'd love to even do live shows. I'd love to do something.
Oh, that'd be or like amazing. A live,
or like rent out. I mean, I'd be even happy renting out a bar and having everybody come to the bar and do like a small hangout session. I won't say meet and greet, because that's not that, you know, we're not like stars, but we could always have like a little get together where we all hang out. You guys can ask us questions about the show, and you can hang out with other friends and get drunk and stuff. That sounds great. If we create a relationship from our show that ends up in a baby, you can name it Goo.
Exactly. You can name it Goo. I feel like I need that to happen to me now.
That has to happen.
All
right, everybody. We've droned on long enough. But if you want to follow the show, just Google Unfortunate History. Please sign up to our newsletter or follow us on any of the social media. If you want to follow me, just Google Cody Pennington. Greg?
If you want to, like I say, if you want to follow me, we're just going to go straight for the Instagram handle. At the minute, it's GSkin93. It's going to be changed to GooSkin93 because that's my new thing.
Awesome. Awesome. Fantastic.
How is Goo spelled? Tell me before I do this.
G-U-E.
G-U-E.
Yeah.
Goo.
I'd say Goo. I wouldn't say Goo.
It's got to be goo now. Even if we change how it's spelled, it's goo. That is goo.
100% goo. Mm-hmm. Well, with that said, we're going to have... Shit. With that said, thank you guys so much for listening, but unfortunately, we got to go. So stay unfortunate.
Stay unfortunate, guys. Thanks for listening. Ta-ra.
Bye.